Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the podcast series Breaking Borders, where hosts James Service and Kevin Rutter gather amazing stories and advice on expanding your company abroad from some of Norway's most exciting businesses. This podcast is brought to you by Goodwill and is exclusively part of Oslo Innovation Week 2021. So, what is Oslo Innovation Week? Oslo Innovation Week brings forward new voices and innovation in action. The event highlights bold solutions that solve real global challenges through entrepreneurship, technology, and innovation. With that said, it's an honor to be part of it. In today's episode, we welcome Christopher Parmo, the CFO and COO of Verdane. We speak about what exactly it is that makes Nordic tech companies so successful, as well as what investors typically look for when startups seek investments to go abroad. So, let's go.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome. It's day 2 of Oslo Innovation Week. We're joined by Christopher Parmo, who's a COO of Verdane. I'm James, Marketing Manager here at Goodwill.
And I'm Kevin, I'm CFO here at Goodwill. So, Christopher, lots of people know very well that the Nordics are very big in technology, very well known for innovation all over the world, and certainly we here in the UK hold them in high respect for that. So if you can just talk us through a little bit, Christopher, your journey, a bit about Verdane, who you're backing, why you're backing them, and actually why you think Nordic countries in particular are so successful around the world and what drives that innovation. So Christopher, if you can introduce yourself and talk us through your story, please.
Sure, and great to meet you guys. First of all, from my stories, I've always worked in tech and always worked in growth companies. I've even founded one that was quite successful. Always been also owned by VCs, private equity, and so on. So I know the opportunities and challenges of that relationship. I decided to, you know, join Verdane to actually help growth tech companies. The vision of Verdane is to be the preferred partner to growth tech companies. And we think that this partner relationship is very, very important. That kind of journey of a growing in tech company can be, you know, sometimes very rewarding, sometimes very painful. Being in a partnership is something that we feel is very, very important.
Would you say your approach, Christopher, therefore, is to be closer than what other VCs might be in being that growth partner?
Our business is also evolving, right? So I think in general, startups and growth companies, the world is traveling so fast now, right? So you have to sort of pivot all the time. You have to be super flexible and agile. That's also something that comes to sort of our business as investors. We will see a change for the coming 5 to 10 years. And us for Verdane, we really emphasize this partnership and we really, really believe in sort of our focus. So I mean, all we do is tech, consumer tech, software, sustainable tech. So we're very sort of specialist investors, I think is on the rise in general. And then also we're really, really focused on these growth journeys. So we don't do, you know, really large companies. We don't do super small companies, but we do the companies that are somewhat successful and that will sort of embark upon the growth journey of becoming a global number one. And then obviously, you know, being partners is about, you know, playing each other's strengths and helping each other. And in that sense, we are not the traditional investor that takes a board seat and sort of helps with money and network and so on. For example, we have you know, growth hackers that can help you enter the German market. We have tech experts that can you know, make sure that you have the right architecture and the right team and the right tech processes in place. Talent experts, we do a lot of analytics and data and so on. So I think the investor world is evolving into being or having more competency that our partners, the companies we invest in, actually need.
Who do you think is the driver on that? Is that in terms of like the VCs just want to be closer to their portfolio, or is it that the portfolio needs more help?
In general, the world is moving in a direction where the best companies, they will find a partner and they will find a partner that will help with the most value creation. Figuring out that kind of relationship is something that we really strongly believe in. In general, you know, a company does a lot of the work themselves and, you know, needs to possess a strong management team and, you know, have great processes and a great strategy and so on. But sometimes you will get a lot of help from having a partner, seen the journey before, that can help with sort of competency that you don't necessarily have available in the company before. Include you in an ecosystem where you meet other growth tech companies with other or with the same kind of challenges and, you know, of that sort, help you create more value basically through stuff that you don't necessarily have available.
That makes real sense. It's quite interesting to hear that it's not the traditional route where you're on the board, you know, perhaps being a bit more dictatorial in style, but much more partnering and bringing additional layers of competencies that can work in partnership with the business that you're investing in for the benefit of everybody ultimately. Sounds like a really good model.
We see the, you know, the most advanced US ones are moving in that direction. But back to your point, Kevin, also, I mean, it has to be adopted for, you know, the world that we live in, also in Nordics, right? So yeah. We see some of the US ones, they can be a little bit forceful in their approach, going in, changing processes and systems, not having necessarily the Nordic partner approach that we have. Very sort of flat hierarchy, very team-oriented, much about, you know, equality, much about helping each other. Of course, sometimes you also need to, you know, make decisions and have the speed of the US markets. Much strength lies in that kind of a partnership model, which I think we are quite good at in the Nordics also.
And in terms of the businesses that you work with, you partner with, when do you typically get involved with those? Or what stage of their journey?
What we really believe in is looking at high growth markets, right? So we spend quite a lot of time analyzing what we think will be the next big thing in terms of markets. And that could be, you know, health tech, could be education, which are, you know, markets that are ready for being matured and being sort of digitalized. It's, you know, markets that maybe have gotten a boost during COVID. And then we have, of course, all of the software markets that makes the businesses more efficient. We're quite also good on e-commerce, I would say, and digital consumer models. We've done some energy tech and so on. We find those markets that we and which we think will be, you know, a wave that companies can surf. A market growing 20% a year in general is obviously a good place to be.
You mentioned health tech, you mentioned ed tech, obviously. AI gets a lot of talk at the minute. Is there industries that you think are next up and coming to be disrupted a bit more that you're willing to share?
Yeah, of course. We are actually quite big on what we call sustainable consumption. We think agri-tech is, you know, a very exciting area. We've done a lot of re-commerce, you know, so selling used, for example, mobile phones back, which we think will be big. Health and education and so on, where cybersecurity is something that we have been investing in long before COVID and which has, you know, gotten the boost that it needed, I think, now with COVID. So there are numerous, and AI, as you mentioned, but I think we see AI as more of a part of many of these other markets, right? The health and education and so on. So AI in general is an extremely interesting part of the markets.
Just going back a minute or two then, what do you think that it is about, you know, your part of the world, the Nordic region, that allows them to come up with some of these great ideas, you know, year after year and expand globally in many cases?
Yeah, so I think in general, we're lucky to have, you know, purpose-driven, empathic markets, I think, and good education systems, which educates a lot of great talent. And sort of when you combine great talent with the passion for purpose and technology, you get a really, really strong combination. And I think one of the sort of core sustainable competitive advantages of the Nordic region is that we don't have that much, I would say, you know, differentiation between people. So that means that, for example, a barista in the Nordics will make a lot more money than a barista in the US, but a developer in the Nordics will make a lot less money than a developer in the US. In general, our societies with great, you know, standard of living and great universities and so on is educating a lot more developers than we're educating baristas. And that means that, you know, we're very, very well rigged for evolution because we have great developers that doesn't cost that much, right? Which gives us some sustainable competitive advantage the way we see it.
When these businesses seek to scale to other territories and to move abroad, given that sort of background, what are the biggest challenges that you see them facing as part of that?
Yeah, so first of all, I think That's a huge reason for partnering with someone like us. So we often partner with the local champions, and then we have offices across Europe. We know the other markets. We have other companies that have made that journey. We have, you know, experts in the US if you want to enter US. We have, you know, growth hackers in Germany, as I mentioned, and so on. That's typically when you have a great product or service in a company. That's typically when you're going into the scaling phase where you can go wrong. For example, if you're a Swedish company thinking of entering the German market because you're tempted by, you know, so many people, or US market, it might be that where you are in your journey, it's better to enter some of the Nordic countries. And then already now, of course, create a plan for Germany, but not do that right away, but do more of a stepwise approach. And then also maybe get some help along the way on entering those markets, capturing those customers, you know, making yourself visible on Google and all those kind of things. That's typically where we partner with companies, is when you have a great product or service locally and you sort of want to become a global number one. In that kind of journey, you can make sort of wrong steps.
Partnering theme there, really important. But in terms of, you know, Verdane and your own people, where in the world do you have people located right now?
Yeah, so we have 6 offices across Europe and are aiming to open 2 more during the next year. And it's typically all of the Nordic countries and Germany, UK. We're going a little bit also more into the main parts of Europe, like Benelux and Spain and so on.
Are these offices there to facilitate, therefore, your existing portfolio, help them into those territories? Is that primarily what they're doing as opposed to looking for investments? So you're backing just Nordic companies, is that right? Yeah.
Both look for investments and help existing investments. And I think we've seen through COVID that, you know, the world has become boundless, I would say. So working digitally is not really an issue. Could, you know, have all our employees in one country. What we experience is that it's not so much about collaboration when it comes to a global organization, but it's more about understanding the markets, the culture, you know, the networks. If you're going to help someone become a, you know, a global champion, you need to also have sort of the global mindset yourself, and also, you know, a little bit about diversity also. So geographic diversity, I think, is also something that's underestimated.
Across the Nordics, so do you think there's like certain countries have different specialities? So do you see, I know there's a lot of health tech companies, obviously, in Sweden. Are there areas in which different countries are stronger?
I think in the outside the world, or at least the US looks at as Nordics as one country, right?
Yeah.
We probably think that we are a lot more different than what we really are, but there are definitely some differences in culture, the ideas you have and so on between the Nordic countries. Also some apparent differences in strengths and weaknesses. So one example is that we are, at least we view ourselves as the best e-commerce investor in the Nordics, perhaps even Europe. Had a lot of successful e-commerce cases, and we've also the one that has done the most e-commerce, right? And that kind of journey for us started in Sweden as the most mature country on e-commerce. And then we've been able to ride that wave sort of into the other countries that are, you know, 2 or 3 years behind. And now we're seeing a new emerging wave into, you know, more sustainable e-commerce, maybe a little bit more Amazon-proof e-commerce, such as, you know, own brands and owning the whole value chain and niche products and so on. And then we're sort of able to ride that wave into the other countries as well. There are definitely interests. And Norway, for example, is strong on energy and maybe a little bit on health and so on. Right?
You've mentioned the word culture a couple of times there, and it's talked about a lot as businesses move to different territories. How big a deal is that when you're talking about things like e-commerce, which is arguably a little bit more detached from culture?
Yes, I think I mentioned that, you know, we analyze the markets, try to find the winners in the markets that we really believe will grow more than 20%. Then we know the winners will grow more than 30% a year. And then obviously it's a lot about culture, both, you know, in the company and in the markets that they want to enter. And then that's often where we are in execution mode and where we experience, you know, an outside view from us comes in handy with the companies.
Obviously, for any of the listeners now, so there's some early stage companies that are listening who are looking to raise funding. They're thinking Verdane's the one that we want. What approach would you say they go for? So maybe if you talked about just a couple of your latest investments, how they've come about, that kind of thing would be really helpful.
In general, you know, when you're a startup working in and being part of a startup team or a growth company, a scale-up team, you know, less is more. So, you know where you're going to be the winner, scope it right, and then do things in the right order. The same often goes when you approach investors. Try elevating pitch, you know, get to the core of things rather than having a lot of slides and so on. In general, you know, just focus is so extremely important.
I get your point about doing all of that analysis to understand where the great opportunities is. You know, obviously, that's really important. But how important is that in terms of, you know, the market, the idea versus the management team of the businesses that you might be looking to partner with?
From our view, the market is always the most important, because if you have a fantastic management team, you will struggle in the wrong market. You can, of course, pivot into the right market. But then when it's the companies that we are looking at, is, you know, usually they have a great product or service, so that kind of have materialized. We were invested in a company once that delivered mobile phones. And then we all know what happened with Apple and iPhone and so on. They lost their biggest customer, and we lost that investment. That was because we didn't really understand what was going to happen in that market. For us, that was a, sort of a painful learning, that the market is obviously most important. And then we have another investment example, Desenio, which was back to e-commerce. We really understood the sort of the market and the potential of that kind of niche. They're selling posters online. We were able to, with that kind of niche and focus, they wanted to expand into other product categories and so on. We said, you know, this is what you're best at. This is your fantastic product service. We focus on that. And then we rather help you scale geographically. Did that, and that was actually now when we listed it in, I think it was January, it was the largest Nordic e-commerce IPO, initial public offering on stock exchanges ever, valued at 11 billion. So we bought it at, you know, 250 million SEK, sold it for 11 billion SEK. Quite a journey.
Nice. Do you ever come across a scenario where you see a product or a service or an idea where you think, this is amazing, this is the best thing I've seen in many years, but the founders, the management team that you might be working with, you think are clearly the wrong ones to help take that forward?
That has happened, yeah. Usually the way we think about it is, when we enter a partnership with the company, we want them obviously to invest much, we will invest much, and then we sort of join the partnership, we're in the same boat for, you know, the next X amount of years. Hopefully for a long time. And throughout that journey, everyone has strengths and weaknesses, right? Could be a management team where maybe your strengths are not these particular areas. What we see is often, you know, many are not that good at what Kevin is good at, probably. And we always think that, oh, we always need to recompose the team anyway. So we would like to continue with the founding team, and then we will add people who can help them with stuff that they are not necessarily good at, which can be, you know, the first year, like, these kind of things, and then the, you know, the third year when they have added 200 employees, they probably need some more HR competency, or, you know, different kind of competencies at different time.
In terms of the companies, then, how do you typically find them? Do they often approach you for investment, or are you out looking in certain industries which you think are going to grow and think, we want that company? Or
in many senses, we are quite lucky to have a very strong brand in all of our markets. You know, a very, very strong track record, top tier performance in all funds. When we show that, they know that we really know what we're doing, or at least based on historical performance. So most of our investments are actually inbound.
You're doing the selection then, deciding who you want to partner with rather than the other way around. That's a good position from your perspective.
Yeah, but we also try to be proactive. So in many cases, it learns founders, right? So when we organized according to markets, we think that we have the best expert on health technology. Him or her and their team, they always want to talk to early stage companies, even though it's, for, you know, way too early for us to invest, to get inspiration, to understand what's going on, maybe to, you know, do some guidance which may help them in the right direction and increase the chance of success for them, so that, you know, it becomes potential for us at a later stage and so on. We do a lot of outreach as well, but very seldom to, you know, acquire that company right away. Can we buy you next week? It's more of a, you know, hey, we like what you guys are doing. You are not within our size bracket right now. We'd like to keep in touch so that we have, you know, a mutually beneficial relationship.
I mean, you need to be continuously scanning the horizon to some degree so you know what's coming along and who might be out there that's worth talking to in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And you need to know what's going on. If you want to be the best at health tech, for example, you need to, you know, follow the innovation.
Really good story. Really nice to hear more about V'Day and obviously your journey. Two final questions from me. This event is part of Oslo Innovation Week 2021. How does it feel to be part of that event? Obviously, it's there to promote Oslo to the wider world. Have you been part of it before? Or?
Yeah, we love the Oslo Innovation Week. Obviously, being based in Oslo is a little bit closer to my heart for us. Very, very exciting opportunity to, you know, see what's going on, learn about innovation, talk with exciting people and so on. This year, I would say it's it seems like you have designed it for us, to be honest. It's about, you know, scaling Nordic model. Solutions for climate, creative technology, and so on. So it's sort of right up our alley.
Finally, all podcasts, we end with the same question, which, who or what is it that inspires you, Christopher? What is it that makes you get out of bed in the morning?
I mean, one of our values is that we love what we do. And I think everyone at Verdane are not necessarily in it because we have to go to work, but more because we are really, really interested in what we're doing. Probably a very Nordic answer, but you know, many of us are very much big fans of Manchester United and Sir Alex Ferguson.
Great answer.
I feel the need to interject at this point. James is a Manchester United fan too.
In some ways, pretty. I would say that mentality seem to be a little bit Nordic, you know, building the great teams. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson was never afraid to, you know, lose one piece of the puzzle to get everyone else to become better. Saw the strengths in everyone and sort of played those to the maximum. And now there's, you know, a Nordic person that has taken over the team, which seems at least so far more successful than the predecessors, but we will see before the upcoming season, I guess.
We will.
Perfect. We can continue the Manchester United talk another time, Christopher, but for now, really appreciate your time. Really great overview of it, Dane, and your journey.
Thank you for listening to the podcast Breaking Borders, an exclusive part of Oslo Innovation Week. This series is brought to you by Goodwill. We've helped thousands of overseas companies enter, grow, and scale in the UK. Read more about what we do and find out if we can help you at goodwill.com. With that said, we'll see you in the next episode.